I'm Nick Zeppos, Chancellor of Vanderbilt University. Welcome to the Zeppos Report, a podcast where I talk with the people shaping and helping us understand our world. My guest today is Megan Berry, my very good friend and our esteemed mayor of Nashville. Megan was elected to office in 2015, and she has already made a remarkable impact. She has strong ties to Vanderbilt, earning her MBA from the Owen Graduate School of Management, and I'm pleased to say that her spouse, Bruce, is a professor at the Owen School and is a good friend as well. Megan has joined me in my office to discuss our exciting city of Nashville, Vanderbilt's role in Nashville, Vanderbilt's increased global and national prominence. And I think we'd love to have the mayor bring us up to speed on the dynamic, exciting, endless work that she undertakes to continue to improve our city. It's great to have you here today, Megan.
Chancellor, thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, if you're going to call me Chancellor, I'm going to call you Mayor.
No, you please call me Megan and I'll call you Nick. How's
okay.
that? There you
okay.
go.
So there's something. You and I are kind of transplants here, but there is something magical about this area where you're the It City. You have your challenges, but you're the It City. We're the It City. We have the happiest students in the country.
I saw that. Yeah. I think that's great.
And we have challenges. You know, if there's one unhappy student, I'm going to work on that.
Sure, sure.
And, but what do you think contributes to what we have here in Nashville that everyone notices? I mean, bring people from around the country, and they're like, God, Nashville and Vanderbilt are really different sorts of places.
Well, I think, first of all, that is absolutely true. And I think it's because we're a warm and welcoming place. And I think you see that with Vanderbilt as well. We're a place that welcomes everybody. And we build bridges instead of walls now. Yep. That may be a little political for you at the moment, but I got to tell you, that vibrancy comes and that specialness comes because we're a diverse city. And you see it in the student body that you have here at Vanderbilt, and you see it reflected across our great city. And the other thing that I find is we're also known as Music City, and music just makes people happy.
Yeah. I think it brings what we kind of and you have called, and we think writ large, of the creative class.
Yep.
So if you go over to our Wondery.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yes, absolutely.
They're creating new ways to understand the world, diagnose diseases. It's a remarkable engine of innovation. And I have found that, you know, education in Nashville, we're called the Athens of the South,
right,
which warms my heart. I tell people we have a beautiful Parthenon, and it's in better shape than the original. And
much
the
better.
British never carried it off.
That's right.
So as a Greek American, I really appreciate that. Then I think you have a lot of education, FIS, TSU, Meharry, Lipscomb, Belmont, Trevecca. We have all these great schools. Then we have healthcare, and then we have this music scene, which is really authentically American.
Yes.
And so I think those all contribute to it.
And I don't want to undersell the importance of all that great creative energy that you just captured with the universities. You have these students and you have these professors, and that brings a lot of vitality to our city. And I think that's why it's wonderful to have Vanderbilt right here.
Well, I think we all are kind of in the human development
business. Agreed. Yep.
And, you know, you're focusing on things like, well, someone's moving with a family.
Right.
Do I have great education for them? Are there great parks for them?
Yep.
What is the quality of life? Are we a thriving, safe, inclusive city? Let me talk a little bit about kind of the values that I think you've talked about and I think Nashville stands for, and then our values, which is, you know, we really focus on inclusion and diversity and equity, with the idea being that that's the way we're going to build thriving, healthy societies. And, you know, we at Vanderbilt, you know, we love our arboretum. There are beautiful buildings going up all the time.
Right.
But we're really just a collection of beautifully diverse, wonderful people from around the world. How can the citizens of Nashville, how do you think Nashville works together to create that inclusive environment? We work just on our little 330 acres here. How do you think of it and your role?
Well, I think the values that Vanderbilt has on diversity and inclusion and equity are ones that are reflected back in the city. And we think about diversity and inclusion in a couple of different ways. Diversity just gets you on the team. Inclusion actually gets you in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And we're very much focused on that as we look at our metro government. In fact, when I came into office, we created the most diverse office of the mayor that has ever been, reflecting the citizens of Nashville. And I think that's important. But it's not just that. It's also then taking that inclusion and that equity and making sure that you are creating a culture of inclusion.
Yeah. I think, maybe it's just my feeling of getting old and wondering what influence I have, but I find that a lot of my job is setting a tone at the top,
right,
and trying to find, the things in Nashville or the things at Vanderbilt that could be better, that we've got to be honest about, but then to really distill the key values of the university. And you had to speak out recently, and I applaud you for it. You've been a very strong supporter throughout your career of the LGBT community. And you had to speak out, which I applaud.
Thank you.
On this so-called Nashville statement. And you must have felt a little bit like I do. It's, if someone says the Vanderbilt statement, it's like, no, I mean,
Right.
You don't
own
speak
that.
For Vanderbilt.
That's right. That's right.
And,
exactly.
You don't own it, but you are the mayor of this city that's doing remarkably well because of those values. So I applaud you for speaking out. And how did you react to that? I mean, did you know it was coming, or how does that just hit you as somebody who every minute is saying, this is what we stand for?
Right.
You do it in action and deed.
Well, we sure wish they'd gone somewhere else and crafted their statement and used some other name. But I think what we saw when we saw this termed as the Nashville statement, it goes fundamentally against everything that we do every day. It's exact opposite of, I think, what Nashville stands for. And so, I get that history has places where people have convened and then named their things after where they've convened. I get that. But I think for us to actually use the name Nashville, as you just said, and if somebody were to say Vanderbilt, it sticks, and
right.
And that's not who Nashville is. And we have worked very hard in Nashville to make sure that we are a diverse, warm, and welcoming place. And so it was really easy to come out and say, this does not reflect who we are.
Yeah. Well, I applaud you for that. I certainly, stand by that as well. We're very much a global city.
Yeah.
And again, I believe that enriches the economy, the culture. It makes us better as individuals to say, well, I didn't know that, or I had not looked at things that way. There's talk about, they call them minority, majority cities.
Sure.
And things like that. But, I'm a little old fashioned. I go with E Pluribus Unum.
Right.
How are cities the places that, I think universities do it, but are cities the places of the great pluralistic experiment?
Sure. And I think that you're seeing this right now in the influx of new people who are coming to Nashville. And, we call the folks who come here new Americans. And I think that's been reflected in the fact that we have 120 languages in our school system. What a gift.
Yeah.
These are multilingual children that are going to set us on the path for a global economy. We need to make sure that they're English proficient, but they also need to keep that first language. And that's going to be critical for our success. And we've tried to do things as a city government where we're creating more opportunities for dialogue. We have the My City Academy, which brings in those new Americans to help them understand how government works. But I really think it's about leading by example. Mm-hmm. And I think about you, and I think about your leadership. And when you reached out to Conexión Americas and joined their board, again, it's about setting that tone that you just
and
talked
stretching
about.
Stretching yourself.
That's
so
right.
That you have to set an example. If you start telling everyone else, well, you need to get proximate.
Yep.
You need to stretch yourself, but I'm going to sit in my little cocoon.
Right. And we're seeing coming out of the administration yesterday, a huge heartbreak for 800,000 kids, the dreamers. And I think the more that cities can be at the table and making sure that we are welcoming these new folks who are going to be so critical to our economy, the better off we're going to be. And so, you know, I hope that Congress will recognize this and make sure that they're taking action sooner than later.
Yeah, we feel the same way. We're in the education business, and we feel as if someone's been brought to this country and they're a young person and they've only, you know, kind of thrived and succeeded and they're going to be educated, you know, I'm kind of, those are the people you want. I tell people the scary thing is when people come here and get educated and want to leave.
Right.
I mean, or what if they don't even want to come to get educated because we're not good at education anymore?
Right.
I read an article yesterday where, you know, whether it's football or universities as academic institutions, we're ranking, all looking at rankings.
Sure.
And we, I always look at the, what are the top universities in the world? And, you know, it's not a fair contest in the sense of a lot of things are very subjective. But when you look at them, however you calculate them, it's like, okay, they're largely dominated by American universities.
Sure.
And for the first time, you start to see Chinese universities moving into those rankings. And, you know, I mean, you know, there's certainly a lot we don't know about the world. So if other countries and their universities make discoveries, that's great. But yet America has really been the beacon and the destination for the world's greatest talents.
Yeah.
And sometimes those talents need to be developed.
Right.
So I worry a little bit about a country that kind of turns its back on talented people from around the world and then really starts to underinvest in education.
And this isn't even just turning our back. It's shutting a door and like with a really loud clamor. And I think you hit it. Cities and countries that aren't bringing people in, they're not growing.
Right.
They're dying.
Yeah.
And I know as the mayor of a city, you want your population to be increasing. You don't want it to be decreasing. So I have serious concerns about that. But I think that, you know, places like Vanderbilt, places like Nashville will continue to be those beacons to welcome people.
Yeah. I also think that you've done a great job, and we see it on our campus as well. Nashville has been a city with a long tradition of protest.
Yep.
To make the world better. And, you know many of the individuals who are still with us or who have passed, like John Sigenthaler, but our own, you know, James Lawson. How do we think of a civil discourse in a city that's pluralistic? And are you pleased with the level of the discourse that you find in Nashville?
Well, I think that everyone in Nashville has been part of these conversations for a long time, and I think that's helped us set ourselves up for being a place where there is nonviolent confrontation. We had a protest yesterday with 500 people who were, again, protesting DACA, but very much just using their voices as a way to bring attention to this. I think that when I look at protests and I look at that civil discourse, I really try to see what the grief is underneath the grievance.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes if there is a grievance, it's because people feel like they are losing something.
Yeah.
Or there is some other loss that they are not connected to. So if I can find that, then what we try to do is take that conversation, which is often conflict, turn it into conversation, and then turn it into action.
Right.
Because that's what gets the momentum going. And that, I think, is the real wonderful part of Nashville, is that discourse.
I think you have to be very open and legitimately understand pain and grief and exclusion, and then, you know, try to really be empathetic.
Yep.
And and I think that's a skill that you have to have in your job. And I dare say even I sometimes really think it's very important for my job, because people you know, we can say, here's how I feel, but you're the mayor, I'm the chancellor.
Right.
So how do other people really feel about their current state? And I think, you know, you have to really listen and kind of stay in there.
Yeah.
And listen. And then I do think coming up with action items are really, really important. How did you craft an agenda when, I mean, obviously you lived in Nashville, you were on the council. How did you kind of say, here's my elevator speech, here are the three or four things we're really going to focus on? Because I've been here a long time and your priorities are really critical. How did you identify them and how do you advance them?
Well, I think that you and I both share the compassion component, but then you also have these core values that you have to lead on. So even though you may be listening to people and hearing their pain and hearing their grief and grievance, you ultimately have to lead. And the issues that have been important to Nashville are haven't changed much. Yeah. You know, it is about access and opportunity.
Right.
And that comes down to education and transportation, housing, jobs, and public safety.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, those are the kind of the tenets of any city that's going to function well. Mm-hmm. And then making sure that that exists with opportunity and access.
Yeah, we think of it the same way. We call it Opportunity Vanderbilt and access to a great education. But I do think, as you said, well, you know, you're invited on the team, but are you really playing?
Right.
Or you're invited to the party. Did someone ask you to dance or ask you to sit down at his or her table or their table?
Right.
And so I think those are really, really critical distinctions. What surprised you or what has surprised you about being mayor? I mean, I think my 10th year I finished, and I come in every day, and I think the reason I love it is like, boy, I didn't know that.
Every day is different.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What are the kind of, and you were on the council.
I was.
Yeah, and you're just, you know, you know the city, but what have been the surprises?
I think 40% of what I knew on the council is about, I mean, there was 60% of this job I had no idea. But I will tell you that the thing that has surprised me the most has been the fact that having an MBA has been critical. This is a CEO job, and it is about understanding the basic way to run a business. Government is not a business, but you can use the basic tenets of how to run a business to make a city more efficient and effective.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's it just kills me to say it because I'm a faculty member.
Sure.
But yet it's a big, complex place, and if it does not run right, it's like, well, who's the CEO? I mean, and you have the same responsibilities down to, you know, the potholes.
Hey, that's right. If your trash doesn't get picked up.
If your trash doesn't.
It's my fault.
My father-in-law was was a city mayor.
I remember that.
Yeah,
that's right.
And he used to joke to me. He's like, I had all these great ideas, but when I really wanted a good turnout, I'd put a leash law on the city council agenda because it would be the most people I could get to a city council meeting.
I love that. That's great.
What are you most proud of? And I don't want to put you on the spot because you're a pretty humble person. What are the things that you kind of say, we've gone from A to B, and it brings a smile to my face when
Well, I will tell you the thing that has been the most exciting in the last 2 years has been to create something called Opportunity Now. And that was where we took a hard look at our poverty numbers and also our kids and said, how can we lift kids out of poverty? And we know a couple of things. One, that you have to get that first job. And so we wanted to create a mechanism where kids could get that first job. So we challenged organizations across Nashville to put our kids to work this summer, and we targeted 14 to 24-year-olds. They had to be in paid, meaningful internships.
Right.
And we had over 11,800 jobs created for those kids, and over 9,000 kids came through the portal to connect with those jobs.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, that is the kind of life-changing moment for a kid. I use this as an example. I sometimes go to the police debriefs, and we were one the other day, and the guy was saying, well, we got this kid. He's like been responsible for, you know, 80 burglaries. And I'm like, okay, He's obviously motivated. Yeah. He will work nights. Let's get that kid rechanneled so that we can actually find him an opportunity so he can be successful.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, even I just remember with all the support and privilege I had growing up, getting, you know, a paycheck.
Right.
And really saying to myself, someone values me enough that they'll actually pay me for this.
Right.
And I think if we don't recall those own experiences and then we criticize a community, then I think we've really lost our connection with the people kind of most in need. Talk to me a little bit about traffic and transit.
It only took us 10 minutes to get there, Nick. I thought we'd get there a lot faster.
I'm kind of all in on it anyways, as you know. And I know Jeff Balzer is too.
Yep.
And
you guys are great leading on this.
Yeah, and you know, between us, I think we have 26,000 employees.
Yep. You guys are a major employer.
And between 100 Oaks and Vanderbilt's campus, you know, we probably have 1,250,000 patient visits.
Yep.
And people, I joke with people. I said, the real traffic problem is we're a catchment area for so many counties in Tennessee, Kentucky, and Alabama.
That's right, too.
And can you imagine driving through Hillsborough Village and saying, I've got to get my grandmother to the cardiology clinic, and I've got to turn left. I mean, it's...
Exactly.
It's
right. It's, yeah.
Yeah. And but I think we've gone... I think we've hit a tipping point with the traffic and with technology.
Yep.
And so how are you feeling about, you know, your plan and the progress I know you'd like to make and we certainly would like to make?
Well, I think that Nashville is going to have a chance to go to the polls in May to vote. So the first thing that I would love to do is encourage all 26,000 of those folks who live in Davidson County
to walk or ride their bike to the polls.
That's exactly right. Or to make sure they're registered.
Or to drive and get frustrated.
That's right. Hey, listen, but first make sure they're registered. You know, Tennessee was the 50th state in the election in November for turnout. So we first need to make sure that people are registered to vote. And that includes a lot of those millennials who want transit. And then I need people to get out and say, I'm for transit and I'm willing to pay for it. Those are the two messages right now. We will have a comprehensive plan that you'll be able to see in the next few weeks that also talks about the funding mechanisms. But, you know, these are broad brushstrokes. You know, I'm not going to get into the specifics until I actually have the cash
to pay for this.
Yeah. So I need people to be for transit and willing to pay for it. I think that we're at that place now in Nashville that we have to step up, and we're not going to get this chance again for a long time.
Yeah, and this is you have this chance to get it right. You've got to get it on the right path because it's not going to be a 3-year solution. It's not going to be a 5-year solution. It's a 20-year plan.
There are short, medium, and long-term wins on this. And I think what you'll see is an increased bus frequency, a lot of but light rail is the goal. And I mean, that does take a little longer to build out. But right after the referendum passes and we have the funding, you'll actually see a better transit system. And that's including bikes and sidewalks, all those modalities. It's not just about light rail. So there's a lot here for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's got to be. I mean, from what I have learned about this and even talking to our own community, it's got to be kind of a mixed strategy.
Yep.
Of there's walking, there's biking, there are buses.
Well, and people
Uber.
Are still going to drive, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so if you can get folks on that light rail, then you can get in your car and go faster.
Yeah, I do think, you know, we're seeing on our campus, and maybe it's just my advanced tenure that I just feel more courageous or a little bit more careless, but I've had a couple town hall meetings on parking on campus.
Oh, nice.
And usually the one thing that the chancellor, the mayor, it's kind of like, okay, let's have a meeting on parking.
Right.
That's usually a no-win.
Absolutely.
And but yet we've had these meetings, and we see a significant shift in our students and our faculty and our staff, both in terms of their just basic frustration and inconvenience, but also a larger sense of, well, this isn't good stewardship for the long term, and Vanderbilt's going to be here for the long term.
Right.
And I know you have to, you know, kind of make shorter term decisions because, you know, that's just the nature of politics. But
because I've got a re-election campaign.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've got one every day. So
yeah, no, listen, I get it.
Yeah, but I'm detecting a shift in attitudes. Are you, as you go out and listen and learn and, you know, talk conceptually, are you hearing different things than you would have 10 years ago, Megan?
I think so. I mean, I think that you have a hunger right now for folks who want transit. And I think it's a generational shift. I also think it's just the new technology that you mentioned. People are willing to get out of their cars now. And even if it's into a Lyft or an Uber, into somebody else's conveyance. So it's that whole like evolution of maybe I don't have to drive. Maybe there are other ways that I can get around. And I think that this is just the natural progression, which is exciting.
Yeah. We put Uber and Lyft on our Commodore car.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great.
And, you know, my concern is I want kids to be safe.
Yep.
And I want kids to be able to, when they want to explore this great city. Yeah. I think one of the big advantages we have is, you know, I kind of say a lot of great universities like Vanderbilt are kind of maybe in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Or they're in cities that swallow them.
Yep.
And so we're in the middle of this city.
Yeah.
But we're a campus. We're not swallowed.
Right.
But yet within a mile and a half, there's so many things to do. And so we think it's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
To say, well, you can walk on this campus and it's a great liberal arts college. You can walk around and see the medical center. But yet, okay, well, I heard I can go to a Predators game or there's a concert downtown or my kids have been known to go to De Mumbrin. I mean, so I do think that our changing demographics, I think we're starting to see more kids without driver's licenses coming to college.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And
and having a car is a cost. So there's a lot of those younger folks who would prefer to put that cost of a car into housing or entertainment or education or something else.
Yeah. So. I have to ask you this.
Yeah.
How do you account for the culinary explosion this city?
There's a new restaurant every day in Nashville.
And I think from my perspective, you know, you get in the New York Times about restaurants and things like that. And, you know, I have a lot of parents coming to visit their kids, and their kids are like, oh, my parents are going to be bothering me so much. And the parents are like, we're going out to this new restaurant.
we're not bothering you. Don't worry about it.
How do you account for that?
Well, I think that Nashville is a maker space. I mean, it's full of entrepreneurs and makers and artisans, and that translates into our food and culinary scene. And you see it not just with food, but with beverages. And I think it's exciting. I mean, we've got a fashion industry here.
Yeah.
We've got a maker industry here and all that. Then that creative energy, that creative class that you talked about picks up on that and creates these great, great, wonderful restaurants that we get to eat in.
Yeah, it's really quite incredible to see that as just a certain parts of the change in the city I get because the seeds were always planted there. Mm-hmm. But it might also be the influx of young people and you know, certainly immigrants.
Well, I was going to say new Americans who come here and open up these great restaurants as well.
Yeah.
I always tell
Lydia and Megan that when I retire, I'm going to start a Greek restaurant. And she said, what are you going to call it? I said, Nick's Place.
I mean, well, of course.
What else? Yeah. One other thing that I've been working on, I know you've been working on really hard. You've had some, you know, breakthroughs, is affordable housing.
Mm.
And when I look at, you know, our community of staff and faculty and students, and then Jeff and I talk, what we're seeing is our graduate students and a lot of our staff are being forced to move out, and then
they have the most that traffic problem.
And then they're paying more for gas.
Sure,
many of them are on hourly schedules. So you know, what used to be a 20-minute ride is an hour and 20-minute ride. What are the things that you're working on, and then what do you say to the big institutions like Vanderbilt and the other important institutions about what we should be doing, Megan? Because I think it's got to be private and public. I don't think you can just wave your hand as the government and say, well, this is all perfect. There's so many major failures on this that, you know, are embarrassments to American limitations of culture and vision.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, I think that you guys are already taking some steps to provide housing for that demographic that I think is going to be key. And if you can bring people back into the kind of toward the anchor, which is Vanderbilt, then you create a vibrant economy all around. Right. And for us, you know, looking at where the housing patterns are, our most cost burden, I mean, we have folks who are unhoused and low income, but that cost burden is really in that $45,000 to $63,000 range, where people are really struggling to find housing that can accommodate them and families. So we have been focused specifically on trying to create more of that housing. And we've got a couple coming out of the ground. Since mm-hmm. I've come into office, we've put $25 million into the Barnes Fund. We've got another $25 million in bonds that we are specifically looking at how do we keep housing from becoming unaffordable. Those places that are going to shift. So you know, it's a complex and strategy that doesn't have just one component. But thank you for the offer of being part of the solution, because you know, we need everybody. And the fact that you said private public makes my heart sing, because let me tell you, the public private days are over.
I think that. I think you can get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, agreed.
And particularly these universities and these great institutions and companies, you know, my view is Vanderbilt's going to be here for 100, 200, 300 years, you know, as long as we don't mess up the world too much. And, you know, we have to take steps that are in the long-term interests of the city and our employees and our staff and our faculty and students. And one of the things that we're talking about is, you know, a big graduate student village.
Yeah.
That's right.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's where the old IHOP used to be. I get a little nostalgic about it. But I do think that I worry about particularly the people that can't afford and then they're driving in. And it's just not a high quality of life that I want for our faculty and staff and our students and many of my graduate students. I think this is getting more common in the country. Certainly if you go to Stanford or MIT and Harvard, it's, well, you're bringing graduate students from around the world and you say, well, where are they going to live? And you say, well, 25 miles away. And they're often the people that really least afford it. And then they're coming from out of the country to be at a school, or, and they're like, well, why aren't I living near the school?
Sure.
And so I do think that there can be a lot of development for our community that hopefully then, you know, kind of sets a tone and an example where others might say, you know, this is really, you know, kind of the right thing to do.
Well, that's why that transit-oriented development is so critical, because if you, I mentioned before, if I'm cost-burdened by housing, but I can eliminate a significant amount of my income going to a car and insurance and gas because I can get on transit, then I can bring my housing options in a little closer. So but I only can do that if I've got transit to get on. So, I mean, all of these things are connected, and that's what's, I think, exciting.
Yeah, I didn't own a car until about 2 months before we moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
So I lived in Chicago and Washington, D.C., and the transit systems were pretty good. Let me talk to you about another kind of visionary issue, but really kind of gets to, you know, the kind of daily work of the mayor, and that's a walking city and sidewalks. And it's very interesting how I will recruit a lot of people from big cities who don't have cars, and they're not going to drive a mile in Manhattan.
I mean, they're going to walk.
Yeah, they're going to walk. And I now have faculty who will walk a mile to work, but yet we all know that if you walk a mile, it depends what the mile is.
Sure.
So how are we making the city more walkable in your mind? And what are the things that we should be thinking about even to make our campus more walkable?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that we've done as part of the budget process is to reflect the community's priorities. So part of the last two budgets have included significant investment in sidewalks, not only just new sidewalks, but also repair of old sidewalks so people can get around. And I agree with you. I mean, the one thing that Vanderbilt is a little bit fortunate to have is that you're part of the urban core.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these neighborhoods that surround Vanderbilt were part of an initiative a long time ago where sidewalks were put down.
Right.
So you can have it's a lot easier to walk around here than it is to say, head out to Jolton.
You're on Ashwood or,
right.
you just walk down 25th.
Yeah, you can walk. So that Vanderbilt's lucky in the fact that you've got these kind of old suburbs, housing units around that have the sidewalk infrastructure. But our challenge is as these new housing developments come online, making sure that sidewalks are part of their commitment. And we've changed some policies. There used to be a point where you didn't have to build a sidewalk. You could just give us some money and maybe that money went to build a sidewalk someday. But under our administration, we're committed to making sure that sidewalks are getting built.
Yeah, well, I notice it when I drive around the city and I say, put a little check mark next to in progress for the mayor's.
Absolutely.
It's like we say about the university. Chancellor Kirkland said, you're never putting finishing touches on Vanderbilt.
Right.
You're always just laying new brick. And I think that's probably how you think, which is, I'm not going to be able to put all the sidewalks in my time.
Right.
But if I can get a start and change the culture and bend the curve.
Well, I mean, you said it earlier that you're going on your 10th year.
Yep.
If I'm lucky, I'll get 8 years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean.
Well, if we're lucky.
Well, thank you. I get up every day. I have a counter on my phone that counts back from August of 2019. And so today I have 690 days until that happens. So I know I've got that much time.
Yeah.
So to move the things along are what we're focused on trying to do.
Let me just turn a little bit to kind of politics and governance. And you go to work every day and you have real problems and you are interacting with people, whether it's me, your neighbors, about, I want this fixed. My child's in that school.
Yep.
And I think mayors are really on the front line of, I can't posture. I mean, I'm in politics.
You actually have to do it.
But I've got to do it. And I think governors are viewed similarly.
Sure.
Do you think we've reached a point in America where the local government and state government is really the way we have to think of things, because we happen to be in a cycle where national governance, without picking one side or the other, it's not working? So do you feel more energized and challenged because you really are, and Governor Haslam, you're on the front lines?
Right.
And the mayor of Murfreesboro is on the front lines. Mayor of Franklin.
Absolutely. You've got an accountability model that's pretty immediate, where you actually are required to get stuff done. And I think folks look at the federal level and are incredibly frustrated, so are looking much more towards states and cities to see an impact on their daily lives. So when we talk about transportation and jobs and housing, federal government's not going to fix any of that. So the expectation is that the local government is going to make sure that any of this that's happening is happening now and for me right here.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a kind of a golden age, a Periclean age in Nashville in many ways. But I do think that the focus has shifted very much to the cities. When you see a disaster like in Houston, you think of the poor people maybe in South Florida and then Puerto Rico, how do you look at that and say, am I ready for those challenges?
Sure.
Or obviously we had a flood, but whatever it is, how do you as a mayor react to those things happening in your brother and sister cities?
Well, first we reach out. So one of the things that we did immediately to Houston was to say, hey, we can be here for you now. What resources do you need? And we sent some of our first responders.
Mm-hmm.
But our second offer is, hey, we also have been through this before on, we can give you any guidance after you've dried out, let us know how we can help. And I find that mayors are really good at that. We actually do come together. And but then there's the whole component about how do you make Nashville resilient? And we actually have a chief resilient officer. And it's all focused on how do you rebound? So, and how are our most vulnerable populations protected? And and when you have something like a flood or a you know, a hurricane or a tornado or some kind of an economic impact. So we do actually spend time figuring out how to react before we have to react. There's a lot of planning that goes on behind this. You know, we were activated on Friday. We had our emergency management system activated, all the whole team. We had 27 swift boat rescues in Nashville on Friday. So, I mean, you know, that didn't get a lot of coverage, but it was, you know, nobody died, and we were doing everything we needed to be doing. And that's about being just ready and prepared.
So, just last question, a piece of advice for us. Vanderbilt, you know, sometimes called the Magnolia Curtain. And I think we are really trying to be in Nashville, of Nashville. What are the things that you would say, you know, obviously we're very proud of what we do as a great international university. How can we be a better citizen connecting to communities? Well, what are the things that, that, you know, I ought to be thinking about and I ought to be talking about and doing to get Vanderbilt, without our heavy hand just showing up, but what are the things that you see and what are the things that we all ought to be focused on that we're probably missing, Megan?
Well, you know, we're so lucky that we have a top research university right here in Nashville. And that is a really critical partnership. I mean, we just had one of your Peabody instructors, professors actually join us as part of a pre-K initiative. And we rely a lot on Vanderbilt's research and academic excellence, not only to engage the faculty, but also the students. And in fact, I'm happy to say that I have more than one student who is a proud graduate of Vanderbilt who is in my office as an employee. And they bring that great thoughtfulness that Vanderbilt teaches them. And it helps set Nashville on a great path. So I think those connections are what we can continue to do and do more of.
Well, you know, we're an international university. People come from all around the world. But I do hope that as Nashville is becoming so much more diverse and inclusive and exciting and interesting, and the opportunities are really a set of opportunities that are just breathtaking, that more certainly of our graduates and the graduates of other schools stay here as well.
Well, you know, Nick, the last three mayors have all been Vanderbilt graduates.
I didn't, and Phil had to go to that backup school.
Yeah, he did. So there you go.
Up in Cambridge, but, you know, and so he seems to have done well. Well, we love the city. We are of the city.
Yes.
I tell people all the time, we happen to be a great private research university, but we grow out of the soil. So we're really happy that we're in Nashville. Let me just close by thanking you and also just reminding our listeners and certainly making clear that the true test of a great university is what the graduates do. We brag all the time. I had 33,000 applications, SATs this,
right,
National Honors this and that. But as Chancellor Hertz said, we are developing potential to go out and lead. And I am so proud that you're a Vanderbilt graduate, but
thank
I'm
you.
Even more pleased that you're the mayor of my city, Nashville.
I appreciate that.
Thanks
more
for joining
you
us today.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it.